This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. The electronic music industry is in many ways a boys' club. You can just take a look at the latest Forbes data. Top 10 earning DJs around the world, all men. But female-led collectives and women-organized parties are getting more and more attention. It's kind of a wake-up call for an industry, and it might even be shifting the culture on the dance floor. Organizers at this year's Moog Fest are pushing back against the male industry dominance. This year, the Tech and Music Festival in downtown Durham, men do not make up the majority of the lineup. Moog Fest is also hosting a panel conversation about women and electronic music in the midst of the Me Too movement. Joining me now is Michelle Luke. She is the moderator of that panel and a music journalist based in Los Angeles. Hello, Michelle.
Hi, how's it going?
Very well, thank you. And also with me is Laura Friedrich, also known as DJ Queen Please, and one of the co-founders of Party Illegal, popular DJ night that ran for years in the Triangle area. And when she's not doing that, she's a forensic chemist. Hello, Laura.
Hi,
good to
Frank.
Have you here. I'm going to start with you and ask you to define electronic
All
music
right.
for me.
I was warned about this question, and there is not a simple answer to it.
Yeah.
I think when people think about electronic music, they tend to think about synthesizers, so electronics that are making sine waves or square waves and filtering those and all kinds of variations on that. Electronic music is also recordings of drum sounds, samples from records, samples from CDs being rearranged. But the definition, really, you get people making beats for hip-hop or beats for pop music. A lot of that is also electronic music. Things that are made on computers you could call electronic music. So it's a pretty wide umbrella.
Michelle, give us a sense of what the electronic music scene looks like in general. And, you know, we sort of led this whole discussion with the fact that it is, at the moment, at least a male-dominated field, right?
It is and it isn't, I think. Obviously, electronic music, as Laura said, is a very vast and varied ecosystem. It mostly takes place in like big nightclubs and festivals, but there are also tons of DIY warehouses and lofts and smaller bars. And sure, yes, if you look at the top 10 list, maybe 80% of them are men. But I think that more and more women are becoming visible in the industry, and a lot more women are being booked. There are a lot of DJ collectives coming up that are all women. And to me, a lot of women and non-binary artists are making some of the most exciting music around. So the conversation has really shifted towards femme and like non-binary DJs.
Well, tell us more about collectives, for instance, female-based collectives, and whether or not even in form that's different than the industry had been organized before.
Well, I think that women have always been in electronic music. They just haven't been as visible. And so by banding together and creating these networks, you know, it's sort of a rising tide lifts all ships mentality. And what's really cool is that a lot of these collectives started on a local level in their individual cities. But as this movement has progressed at such a fast rate, you see these collectives banding together as well to create these international networks. So there's a lot of crosstalk happening. There's a lot of debate. People are really pushing the conversation forward and crossing cultural lines.
Laura, tell us how you got involved in DJing.
Yeah, so I originally was part of the queer scene in Asheville and was doing house parties that were by default mostly women, although I didn't even think about it at the time. It was just me and my friends. And when I moved here, I wanted to do an intentional cross-cultural experimentation, like wanted to have parties that were booking people from the hip-hop scenes, from the electronic scenes, when I started Party Illegal, we had the goal of having at least one woman or non-binary artist on every lineup. And a lot of times that involved going and looking for female artists. It involved hiring female artists that had less experience. It involved teaching people how to DJ. And that was several years ago at this point. So I think, like Michelle was saying, it sort of has grown. A lot of the people that were novices then are now creating their own collectives of other female DJs and teaching more women how to DJ, so it's growing fast.
So as you started this, it must have looked a little different than the scene or somewhat out of the ordinary. As you said, you started it, things have changed. So in the beginning, what kind of reception did you get, and what are the dynamics? Were there anything, you know, in terms of a live setting, anything different in the dynamics?
That's a good question. I mean, I feel like there's more press. Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of with Michelle on this. I feel like there have always been women doing interesting things. It's now just that the press is interested in it. It's sellable now. People can use it to sell things.
It's not just the press, though. I think that the whole conversation has shifted. I think in the past, it was just the norm to see an all-male lineup. People didn't even really question it.
Yeah.
But now that women started carving out their own spaces and challenging this idea that, oh, there are no women in electronics, it's like, of course there are. Mm-hmm. You just haven't been paying attention.
Yeah.
And so now if you see an all-male lineup, it's not, oh, that's the norm. It's like, oh, they're so clueless. They don't get it. And I think that's a really important shift that I've seen in the last 4 or 5 years. It's happened so quickly.
How much is, I mean, we would assume that Me Too and a little bit more of the conversation about women in general may be responsible for some of that, but anything in the industry? I mean, tell us more, Michelle, about the collectives, for instance, Disc Woman and other collectives. How has that changed the conversation and how?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, there are a lot of collectives like Disc Women that have come up in the last few years of young women and non-binary, meaning, you know, post-gender. It's not even really about gender. It's about queerness. They've all been coming up in the last few years. And I think what's really interesting is that, you know, change is an evolving process. So we've seen even the conversation within these networks evolve as people chime in and bring in their own opinions. So it's, you know, it's moved beyond, oh, just women to, you know, female identifying, including trans and queer people, being intersectional, so also talking about race and how a Black woman will be treated differently from a white woman in a club. All of these things, I think. Also, in the past, I think when this all-female lineup started to become, like Laura said, a bit trendy, a lot of promoters sort of glommed onto the trend and just started booking women for the sake of booking women. But I think that these DJ collectives are really leading the way in showing that it should always be about the music first and the community that you're bringing out, and that you need to book a lineup that's interesting, that's empathetic to the people who are coming, and that has style and attitude, you know? If you just have tunnel vision and are just booking women for the sake of booking women, it doesn't even make sense, and the party feels incoherent.
But Laura, you did have an ethos with, say, Party Illegal, right?
Yes.
I mean, I'm sure you wanted to keep it interesting, and I'm sure it was, but there was also an agenda, right?
We were trying to challenge the audience. I mean, I think what Michelle says about people getting into their hole, like, men hire their buddies, they hire other men. People that are into one genre of music are going to keep hiring that genre of music. So we were trying to intentionally push boundaries genre-wise, racially, gender, queer with queerness, like trying to force queer people and straight people to be in space without it being a disaster, which, you know.
Well, tell me about that. How was it?
There were aspects of it that were a success. I was definitely... So as the party got more popular, I do feel like it got straighter, and I do feel like that as more men, and particularly more men that were not familiar with queer ethos came in, the creep factor increased, definitely.
The creep factor being?
The creep factor being people putting their hands on my butt. The creep factor being people commenting on my breasts instead of on the music that I was playing. And, you know, we struggled with that, and I don't think we came up with a solution. We had consent signs on the walls. I had personal conversations with a number of people. I do think the Me Too movement has made progress in terms of more. There are dudes now that are saying, I mean, I disagree with this sentiment, but I've had dudes say to me, oh, things used to be okay, but now they're not. I don't agree with that, but if that makes them stop doing something, you know, I'll take it.
Well, Michelle, but you've written about this and talked about this, that there is a change happening that you're noticing in clubs as well.
Yes, in terms of creating safe spaces, I think that people are becoming much more aware of issues of consent and harassment and how sexual harassment is endemic to the nightlife industry and that something needs to be done about it. And if that means, you know, having to educate the people who come to your party about what's okay and having very strict rules about, okay, if you cross this line, you are going to get kicked out, you are going to get called out. I think that the conversation and awareness around this issue has really improved, especially in certain corners of, let's say, DIY parties and underground parties where the community is much more tight-knit versus a big commercial festival where you're having thousands of random people coming together. But I think that the change is trickling upwards.
Yeah, it's interesting. We talk about the Black Madonna might be one who is part of this conversation. First, I want to play a little clip, Michelle, and we'll come back and talk a little bit about her music, but also about the contribution in terms of this culture of consent now that you're seeing growing to some degree. That's a little bit of the track, He Is the Voice I Hear by the Black Madonna. I'm talking with music journalist Michelle Luke and Laura Friedrich, also known as DJ Queen Please. Michelle is leading a panel in the upcoming Moogfest about women and electronic music in the midst of the Me Too movement, and Moogfest is running this Thursday through Sunday in downtown Durham. Michelle, talk more about the Black Madonna, because I understand that's part, she's leading the conversation about consent in electronic music.
Yes, well, I think she's one of the most well-known female DJs right now, and she has really galvanized a movement around her because she's extremely politically active and speaks her mind. And I interviewed her a couple weeks ago for the LA Times, and she, you know, was commenting on how the music industry is responding or has failed to respond to the Me Too movement, which is also the topic for my panel. And she brought up the idea that, you know, consent obviously has been a huge issue in the overall Me Too conversation, but it's especially important to talk about it within a nightlife context, because if you think about it, like, there's a lot of alcohol and other substances being used in a party situation, which really, I think, blurs the lines of consent, and people don't really know how to talk about it when alcohol is involved. Also, when you work in nightlife, your workplace is a club.
Yes.
And that's a very difficult thing for some people to parse and understand, that it's still a professional workplace, even if there is no HR department.
I mean, it seems to me, Laura, I'll ask you and then I'll come back to you, Michelle, but it's the perfect place to have the conversation, because this is exactly where transgression had been if that dude friend of yours was speaking about anything where he thought that it was okay. And this is the best place to have the conversation.
It is a perfect place, but it's also a hard place. I mean, it's exhausting as a woman in that environment to have to feel like you're trying to party and all of a sudden you're having an antagonistic interaction with someone. A lot of times the hands on your body are random and it's hard to identify who it was in a crowded space, and it's hard to know how to respond to that.
That's changing too, isn't it? Michelle, I'll ask you that there's a lot more, especially through social media, calling out of individuals who are involved in this. Am I right?
Yes, I mean, you've seen that happen all over the world. What I'm interested in is how, you know, this is happening at such an interesting time for electronic music with the rise of feminism and DJ collectives that has been coming into the fore in the last few years. Now we have the Me Too movement hitting, and I think it presents both a challenge and an opportunity for us to move forward in what we've already been doing over the last few years.
Are these two separate venues for change in terms of talking about structural change? Are we talking about nightlife and the club scene versus the industry, and does change look different in the industry itself, the recording industry versus the club scene, or
no,
is it all
I
the
think
same?
Actually the solution is quite simple. We just need more women in power.
Agreed. Agreed.
Because women bring in more women, and so you see change happening through, you know, it's always about these networks. And I don't know if we can always count on dudes to be, you know, bringing up more women. I think what I've seen in the past is that when you give a woman power,
yes,
I mean, a woman who knows what she's doing and who cares about these issues, she will make the effort to make the space safer for other females and non-binary and queer artists.
I don't think that men understand the emotional experience of what it feels like to deal with this. And if you have women, they're going to prioritize it.
So what's the effect? Because you were doing this for a long time with the intention of bringing more women along. Laura, are you mm-hmm. seeing more women? What was the effect? Could you see that it was having an effect by encouraging women to do it? And as you say, sometimes having to do the training before they could show up.
I feel less alone. You know, I mean, having other women out there makes me feel a lot less alone. I've had a lot of women who I think were not capable of imagining themselves. I mean, it's, you know, it's representation, not being able to imagine yourself in the role of a DJ until your friend is DJing and all of a sudden your friend's got cool gear and then you're messing around with the cool gear. I mean, social networks are how people learn things, you know. So if you have women in positions of power writing, they're going to write about women. You have women DJing, they're going to teach their friends how to DJ.
And Michelle, are you actually seeing the change take place? Is it really happening on the ground, or is this just the conversation again in the midst of this other larger conversation, the Me Too conversation?
It is absolutely happening. I think that one of the most interesting ways that it's happening is through workshops and educational sessions that are empowering women to learn the skills and to also become familiar with technology that maybe they've been told since young, oh, this is a guy's thing. And so Moog is actually extremely focused on technology and education. And to me, this is probably the next step in the feminist movement that's been taking over electronic music. Now that we have established a baseline of awareness and visibility, it's about empowering women to have the skills, the technical knowledge, and all the other sorts of knowledge that you need to advance in this industry.
Michelle Luke is a music journalist and the moderator of a panel on feminism and electronic music at this year's Moog Fest in downtown Durham. Michelle, pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Laura Friedrich is a DJ under the name Queen Please, DJ Queen Please. She is one of the co-founders of Party Illegal, which is a popular night event that ran for years here in the Triangle. Also a forensic chemist. Never got to talk to you about that.
It's a whole nother world.
Thank you so much for joining us. Thanks, Laura.
Yes, thank you.
Moogfest features tech, art, and music. It runs Thursday through Sunday in downtown Durham. We have all the information at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, and Amanda Magnus. Robin Copley is our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.